Well, hello there. This is What Matters in North Carolina. It's Thursday, and it's a good day because we are excited about our guests. We have two very, just outstanding guests. I was going to say outstanding female guests, but it doesn't matter who they are or what gender. They are just people that are at the leading edge of their particular fields of expertise. Of course, I'm talking about Jenna Robinson. She's the president of the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. Outstanding guest, outstanding job that she does leading that outstanding organization. Because, folks, there's so much going on in higher education. We need organizations like the Martin Center to really keep their finger on the pulse of what's happening with higher tuitions and things like a lot of the silliness that we've seen with snowflakes and safe spaces and all of that. And then, really, on a serious note, the all-out assault on free speech that, for example, we talked with Dr. Mike Adams about last week. So Jenna Robinson is phenomenal. She does an awesome job as president of the Martin Center for Academic Renewal, and she is going to be our guest to talk about some silliness, that's what I call it, that some faculty folks in the UNC system have, I'm not sure if they had too much time on their hands, but they've written a letter to an accrediting agency complaining about various things, one of which was General Assembly members attending meetings of the Board of Governors. Shock! Oh my goodness! What in the world? Anyway, we'll talk to Jenna about that. And then another awesome, awesome leader of an organization, Tammy Fitzgerald, executive director of the North Carolina Values Coalition. And they have been so active this legislative session and keeping House Bill 2 at the forefront, reminding legislators about the need for safety for females in restrooms and changing rooms and all that. And she's going to be dropping by and talking about some stuff that they've got going on and the latest thoughts that they have regarding House Bill 2. You know, there have been several proposals made. I think there are three now in the House from Democrats, one of which was presented by Governor Roy Cooper. And then there's also one by a House Republican, Chuck McGrady, that dropped last night. So that would be four now, four different proposed bills to look at the issue of repealing House Bill 2. So we'll talk to Tammy Fitzgerald about that. And just to alert you to our fabulous website, nccapitalconnection.com, you can stay up to date on all of the latest goings on, for lack of a better phrase, at the General Assembly with nccapitalconnection.com. Articles there on a daily basis, keeping you up to date on the important legislation that's being filed, because right now that's the stage that we're in. Bills are being filed. I think one group has been, or one bill has been passed, and that's the one that lowers the size, reduces the size of the Board of Governors, and that's on its way to Governor Cooper. We'll see if he signs that or not. But bookmark that, won't you? nccapitalconnection.com, and stay up to date. Between that website and What Matters in North Carolina, we have got you covered. Well, time to talk with Jenna Robinson of the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal here on What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, Jenna Robinson. She is the president of the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal, formerly known as the Pope Center. Jenna, welcome back.
Hi, Mark.
And you're always on the alert and looking out for topics of not only interest, but really relevance to what's going on here in higher education in North Carolina. And the other day, the news came out that some faculty members from some of the North Carolina colleges have some concerns about the General Assembly, the Board of Governors, and they have reached out to the accrediting board, the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges and expressed those concerns. So why don't you catch us up and tell us what's going on here?
All right. So the UNC Faculty Assembly, which is made up from professors across the UNC system, sent a memo to SACS, you know, the accrediting agency,
right,
with 17 particular complaints about what the legislature had done and some of the things that the UNC Board of Governors had done. And their concerns, if you kind of want to put them in a nutshell, there are two things that stand out. One is that it's they're fighting over authority, who has the authority to do particular things in the UNC system. And they're also, if you look at it, there's a little bit of a partisan tinge to it as well.
Right. Well, I think that any time, you know, there's majority situations going on, that sort of tension is to be expected. But what exactly are the faculty complaining about here?
They've got this laundry list.
Yeah.
They're complaining that Board of Governors members are participating in chancellor searches at the various universities. They are complaining about the centers that were closed, including Jean Nichols Poverty Center.
Right.
They're complaining about the president's search. And one of the, I think the funniest complaint is they're complaining that legislators have attended Board of Governors meetings.
Oh, my.
Which is so silly. I mean, it's just a basic transparency expectation that occasionally legislators might show up. And I think that they're kind of grasping at straws here with some of these complaints.
Well, we certainly can't have members of the General Assembly attending a meeting. That right there is grounds for campuses to lose their accreditation. That really does border on the absurd. So also, I'm reading in an article that the News and Observer wrote about this, and they also are complaining that about the legislature's $500 per semester tuition plan for three colleges. And
right.
Also guaranteed admission, they say, would divert students to community colleges. But my question for you, Jenna, is none of this to me has anything to do with an individual university being accredited. So, I mean, this is kind of silly, in my opinion.
Right. And I agree that most of these are completely unfounded. If you look at the statutes to which they're referring, it seems very off base and shouldn't. I don't expect that SACS, the accrediting agency, is going to really say anything about this other than, you know, we reviewed it and this doesn't merit any action on our part, because most of these are, you know, well within the authority of either the legislature or the UNC Board of Governors. And they're also activities that the legislature and the board have been doing in various ways. You know, for years, Democrats put their own, you know, Democratic senators or Democratic representatives would attend Board of Governors meetings, and there were never a complaint. I think what this really comes down to is that there are policy disagreements between faculty members who are very liberal and the General Assembly, which is, of course, Republican-controlled now, and the Board of Governors, which is also Republican-controlled, although it's much less partisan.
Well, what do they think the end game is here? So they've written this memo to the accrediting board, and what do they want the board to do? Do they want them to not accredit individual schools, or do they want them to write a scathing letter to the General Assembly?
I think most of this is probably just to put pressure on the General Assembly and on the UNC Board of Governors to, you know, to include faculty more, to change their ways somehow. I don't think they can honestly have an expectation that Saks is going to do anything about this. I think it is just kind of a pressure tactic, a bullying tactic, really.
Now, Marty Kotus, who is a member of the board, Republican from Greensboro, very successful developer here in North Carolina, he was a guest on our show a few days ago, and he responded to some of the folks that had been saying that while the General Assembly was cutting the board from 32 to 24, that they should also do something about diversity. And Kotus said, look, you know, doesn't matter to me who they are, what race or, you know, male, female, whatever, you know, I'm all about ideas. You know, a good idea is what's important and not appearances. And I thought that was a very strong statement, and that the board really needs to focus on what it's supposed to be doing and not be distracted by some of these, you know, tangential things like this memo to the accrediting agency that, again, I just think is kind of ridiculous.
Right. I mean, the board has a very big job to do and a very complicated job to do. And I think that really the discussions that they ought to be having are around, you know, ideas and what is best for the university system. And it's counterproductive to that the faculty is kind of picking this fight. I don't think it's going to make the board or the legislature more inclined to, you know, to change their mind about these policy issues, because it's just not a very congenial tactic.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. So at the end of the day, you think this is probably not going to go anywhere. Just some folks complaining, and this whole thing will probably.
I think most of these complaints, in fact, are old. I mean, the Poverty Center was closed what, almost 2 years ago now.
Yep.
I mean, this isn't something that Saks doesn't already know about.
So, and again, I may have asked this already, but I really don't understand the connection, Jenna, between. To simplify this, the connection between, say, members of the General Assembly attending a meeting and whether or not an individual university will be accredited.
Right, right. I mean, well, the statute in question says that members of the legislature can't serve on a board of trustees,
right,
or a board of governors. But it doesn't say they can't attend the meetings. I think that these professors' contention is that by attending the meetings, these legislators are asserting undue influence on the meeting process and kind of undermining the board's authority. But I think that is a stretch in every way.
Yeah, exactly. So what else do you see surrounding the Board of Governors, Jenna, that our listeners might be wanting to pay attention to? I know that... I guess new president, not so new now, really, but Margaret Spellings is still getting acclimated probably to her position there. Do you think that she is going to be able to provide good leadership to the Board of Governors?
Yeah, I think she is going to be able to provide good leadership to the system. I just saw her speak at the legislature yesterday, and it seems like she is, you know, she's been to all the universities, she's gotten herself acclimated, and now, you know, we're in budget season, so
yeah.
I think that what to watch from the board and from UNC are, you know, what their priorities are for funding going forward, what will they ask the General Assembly for in order to move forward and to move forward with their strategic plan and their priorities, and we'll see more from them next week on that.
So I wanted to get back to the very last part of this article, quotes, as I mentioned, Marty Kotus, and I think this is a good point, Jenna, that he was talking in terms of the $500 tuition program for three of the historically black colleges universities here in the state that the General Assembly passed last session. COTUS said this program, this tuition program, would never in a million years have come up through campuses or faculty or the general administration because it's a direct benefit back to the students. Basically, I guess he's saying that they would not look at something like this as favorable if it's not directly benefiting, you know, the system. And I think that's a pretty compelling statement. And do you agree with that? I mean, sometimes it takes an objective look.
It's very often true that people who work for the system are thinking of what is good for the system before they think of what is good for the students. So in many cases, we hear about, well, you can't do this, that, or the other because it would hurt a particular institution. I mean, we very rarely hear, you know, from the administration about, you know, what will be good for the students. I think that Marty Kotus's statement is fair, and I think that he's right that this isn't something that would have been proposed by the campuses, because if you keep tuition at $500, that could hurt your bottom line.
Yeah.
Of course, we know that if tuition's $500, they'll probably get a whole lot more demand, and it remains to be seen what'll happen to their bottom line. But I think that it was kind of an out of the box proposal, and it wasn't something that we would ever see come up from the campuses.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jenna, you really, more than myself and others that don't really think about the higher education every day like you do, this statement here that the faculty made, that the removal of former President Tom Ross was done without explanation, I didn't really feel that way at the time, and I was covering that for another venue at that time, but is that a fair statement that he was fired without explanation?
You know, I think that what that came down to is that the press conference that followed Tom Ross's dismissal was just, it wasn't very satisfactory.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, that press conference aside, the system did explain, you know, eventually, or not the system, but the board did explain eventually why they wanted a new person at the helm who would kind of go along, or not go along with, but it was a new board. They wanted to hire their own president, and I think that they eventually got around to explaining that, but it took them longer than it ought to have to explain Tom Ross's firing. But I think that, you know, now 2 years later, we've had an adequate explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, Jenna, thank you for bringing this to our attention and for talking about what appears to be just a group of disgruntled folks with maybe too much time on their hands to be writing letters and complaining to an accreditation board. And how are things going there since you've changed the name from the Pope Center to the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal? Have you things still going well? And I'm sure that you guys are busy.
Things are going well, and I think our new name has been well received. Of course, we're still trying to get the word out. That'll be a challenge, I think, probably all year, that we're trying to make sure people know who we are and what we do. But the people who hear about our name change and realize that we are now named after Governor Martin have all been very supportive and very excited that we've taken on Governor Martin as our new namesake.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, Jenna, you're always awesome, and we appreciate you making time for us once again here on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, are you like me? Is this just silly? 17 issues of concern to some faculty members. And I want to know how this went, okay? Did somebody get on a phone and say, "Hey, you got to meet me for lunch because we got to do something. We got to put together a memo and send it to the accrediting board, the Southern Association of Colleges, and schools commission on colleges. Well, we've got to put a memo together. Well, what do you mean? What's going on? Well, you know, we've had people from the General Assembly attend Board of Governors meetings. What? Oh, no, I'm in. Let's go. Let's have this meeting. All of a sudden, folks are sitting around a conference room table, and they're saying, well, what else? What else? You know, this is really something we need to let this commission know about. Oh, well, they lowered tuition. The General Assembly lowered tuition for three campuses so students could have a better opportunity to go to school. Oh, my gosh. Yes, write that down. Really? Come on, folks. I mean, all this is partisan bickering from some faculty members that do not have enough to do, obviously. So perhaps if they would concern themselves more with bettering themselves and bettering the way that they teach kids who are spending a lot of money to go to these schools, instead of wasting time putting together memos with really unfounded accusations. So what if somebody from the General Assembly attended a meeting? Really? Anyway, thanks for Jen Robinson for breaking that down for us. Now, I'm so excited because in studio with us today is Tammy Fitzgerald, and we're going to talk to her right now. Well, it's a real pleasure to have in studio with us today Tammy Fitzgerald, Executive Director of the North Carolina Values Coalition. And Tammy, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be with you again.
Well, I can't keep up. House Bill 2, seems like every other day somebody's filing a bill in the General Assembly that has something to do with that law. And most recently, yesterday in the afternoon, Representative McGrady filed House Bill 186, and he's got a few Democrats on board. What do you think of this one?
Well, you know, this is no compromise. Really, it's a capitulation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're urging lawmakers to stand behind House Bill 2 because really it's the only way to ensure the privacy, dignity, and common sense rule in North Carolina.
Hmm. So this one, as I understand it, and I haven't read, you know, each word, but I've familiarized myself with it. Doesn't it sort of take things back to the way they were?
Well, that's what they tried to sell it as, but it's not actually what it does.
Okay.
So in terms of bathrooms, what it does is repeal the entire bathroom part of House Bill 2. Now, this is something that Republican lawmakers have told us repeatedly, that they were not interested in repealing the bathroom provisions because everybody agrees those are good and they need to stay, and privacy and safety and dignity are important in bathrooms. But actually, House Bill 186, Chuck McGrady's bill, repeals the bathroom section and says that the state preempts the local governments in terms of setting bathroom policy, but then it doesn't set a bathroom policy.
Hmm.
So that part of it may seem to be status quo, but the other part is concerning because they actually give the cities the right to pass their own bathroom policy in city-owned buildings.
So why is this so hard? Well, that's kind of a dumb question. I know why it's so hard, because the people on the left want to advance their agendas, and we saw that with the Charlotte ordinance. I had Senator Joyce Kravick on last week,
mm-hmm.
and she said, Mark, we're not even thinking about this right now. You know, it's time to move on. In fact, I wrote an article yesterday, is it time to move on from talk of repealing House Bill 2? And I think that...
the answer is yes.
Well, I think that premise was bolstered a little bit yesterday because of what the Trump administration did.
Well, absolutely. I mean, so this the DOJ, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Education sent out letters correcting the Obama administration's unlawful guidance letter to schools last spring, where they stated that they radically really distorted the federal law that was intended to equalize educational opportunities for women and misuse the law to open students' private facilities to members of the opposite sex.
Title IX they were
yes
trying to twist into that.
Yeah, they were trying to say that sex meant gender identity under Title IX, when there's never any indication that Congress ever considered that sex would mean gender identity under Title IX. So yesterday, the Trump administration's Department of Justice and Department of Education sent letters out withdrawing this very unlawful and harmful policy of the Obama administration. And the Trump administration has rightly corrected the error, prioritizing the privacy and dignity of all students and ensuring that schools don't lose crucial federal funding for protecting their students.
So I have, while I was waiting for our time together, I was looking at an article that the Charlotte Observer posted today, and big headline says, Trump's new transgender policy could radically change HB2 fight. And there's some legal folks quoted in here, Professor Greg Wallace, who from Camel we've had on the show a lot. He was saying that the federal lawsuit brought against North Carolina almost certainly will be dismissed.
Yes.
And
I would agree with that as an attorney.
So that would be good.
Yes. And it was shocking that this article was printed not just in the Charlotte Observer, but also in the Raleigh News and Observer on the front page, no less.
Wow. Well,
shocking.
It is shocking. But would you be happy if, as Senator Kravick said, this doesn't get brought up anymore? Let's just move on. We have House Bill 2. And, you know, because there are four bills now, that, as I understand it, one from Representative Brockman and another, I forget who filed that one. But then we have Governor Cooper's and now Representative McGrady's. And this whole hodgepodge of bills, I don't think any of them are going to pass, personally. I don't know that the House or Senate leadership is behind McGrady's bill, Representative McGrady's bill. Have you heard? Are they all in with this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. Is the leadership in with his bill? I mean, it appears that it has some support from some leadership somewhere, mm-hmm. Or it wouldn't have gotten filed. But
yeah.
The bill really is a radical departure from House Bill 2. I'm happy to talk more about it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, it changes the categories that are protected that have elevated status by adding some categories they found in places in federal law. But these new categories are citizenship, veteran status, genetic information, pregnancy, and disability.
Now, and, Tammy, what does genetic information mean?
Well, it means that if you have a genetic test, like if you have your genetic panel workup, that they cannot discriminate against you because you have some genetic propensity towards diabetes or something like that. And this
is that
I'm
really
sure,
necessary in the
well,
law?
Well, I don't think so. But it wasn't in the point I'm trying to make is that those new categories were not in the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Hmm.
They may be in other places in federal law that are, you know, less applicable.
Right.
But one of the categories, citizenship, raises an interesting question because presumably under this category, if you were an illegal alien in the United States, you would have the right to sue an employer who fires you because you're not a citizen. Or if someone denies you housing, you might have the right to sue them if they deny it on the basis that you're not a citizen. So I'm not sure we really want to include that in state law. But some other areas that are problematic is that this bill eradicates the it takes away the ability of the state to govern areas like employment and public accommodations laws and gives that ability to the cities. So the cities can then turn around and do exactly what Charlotte did last year and pass this radical public accommodations and employment law. And they can do it with a simple majority vote of the local governing body. And if people in the city don't like it, they can file a petition to have a referendum to put this on the ballot. And then once it gets on the ballot, they can have it like generate enough votes to actually repeal the ordinance. But it puts the people who don't like these overreaching city policies on the defense and really gives them a lot of burden in order to overturn the laws. Now, that's something that House Bill 2 asserted, that the state government has authority to control or regulate areas of public accommodations and employment, and this appears to give it back to the cities. So this creates another problem, which is, from a legal standpoint, it appears to be an indirect delegation of authority from the state to the cities in the areas of regulating public accommodations and employment, and would most certainly allow the cities to raise their minimum wage without any kind of oversight from the state.
Now, does public accommodations, can they use that phrase to, for lack of a better expression, all I think to say is, can a city use that phrase to weasel in another bathroom?
Absolutely. This is law? The bathrooms are public accommodations. They're open to the public. So the cities, the other thing under this bill is the cities, you know, can control their own buildings.
Right.
But the problem here is that the state has said only the General Assembly has the right to control bathroom policy, even though they didn't set a policy. So I'm not sure how that plays out in reality, but it's a problem. I'm just telling you. But the expansion of these protected classes and allowing the cities to pass these harmful ordinances like Charlotte's, that is the real harm from this bill, because it doesn't stop what Charlotte did. It doesn't prevent it from happening in every city across North Carolina. And really, all it does is give people who don't like it the right to repeal it with a referendum, which is going to be very difficult to do. It's going to cost a lot of money, and people who put their names on those petitions are going to be the targets of bullying and coercion from the other side. So it's really an unacceptable solution.
Well, our guest is Tammy Fitzgerald here, and I'm glad, Tammy, that you're smarter than I am, because I've been trying to read through the bill, and you're making it a lot more understandable. So I appreciate that, the fact that you're an attorney probably helps. But I think that as a citizen and as someone who has a forum to comment, I look at this and I think that what this bill does is takes what is otherwise a fairly clear pond and throws a bunch of mud in it. I think that it muddies the waters,
yes,
particularly when it comes to cities.
Well, it specifically does. And, you know, one thing that I want to point out about the public accommodations, you raised the issue a while ago, is that this is where we've seen these harmful lawsuits pop up in other states, like Baronelle Stutzman, whose case just got decided by the Washington Supreme Court this week.
Right.
They denied her request, and they sided with the lower courts that said she had discriminated against a gay couple when they came in and asked her to arrange flowers for their same-sex wedding.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a longtime customer of hers. She had served him for 9 years with flowers for other occasions, but a same-sex wedding violates her faith, and she was very polite in declining to arrange the flowers. And, in fact, they had lots of offers, this couple did, from across the country to provide flowers for their wedding free. And yet, they have chosen to sue this woman and have won in the state courts.
Yes.
And she will lose her florist business, her home, and her life savings if the U.S. Supreme Court doesn't take this case and overturn it. But that is the kind of public accommodations case that will come to our state if a bill like Chuck McGrady's passes, because these are the laws that allow that type of lawsuit against someone who has a business open to the public.
Well, let me just play advocate here on the other side. Is that a bit of a stretch to think that, or do you really believe that, what you just said?
That those kinds of cases will come to North Carolina?
Yeah, because of the public accommodations.
Oh, absolutely.
Really? That,
yes, because this language in the Charlotte ordinance and in McGrady's bill, you know, the kinds of ordinances that will be passed as a result of McGrady's bill are the very ordinances that would require someone to violate their faith and serve a same-sex wedding couple. And there is no exemption for religious freedom, for following one's conscience, and McGrady's bill makes no provision for religious freedom at all.
Well, you know, you've opened a whole nother can of worms there, because I don't understand, really, from a legal standpoint. I mean, we have a Constitution, we have a First Amendment, that should be enough, and yet these courts seem to have just gone completely rogue and have relegated the First Amendment, whether it's religious freedom or freedom of speech, have relegated it to the agenda of the LGBT community.
In most cases, they have. Only in states where there's a Religious Freedom Restoration Act or some other type of First Amendment statute on the books are courts really looking to protect religious freedom. Unfortunately, in North Carolina, the only religious freedom protections we have are in our Constitution. And we don't have any statutory protections that are more specific, like a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That was brought up 2 years ago. The legislature wouldn't even bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
They were too afraid of it. And yeah. So now we're seeing what happens.
Are we going to do that this year?
Well, if they proceed in trying to pass bills like Chuck McGrady's, you know, we're going to press for religious freedom protections, because then they'll be needed. If we repeal House Bill 2, we are going to need religious freedom protections.
One of the criticisms, Tammy, of House Bill 2 is that there is no enforcement mechanism. There's no penalty mechanism. At least this bill, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable to read, but it talks about peeping and all of that kind of stuff, and sets out some, you know, legal and penalty issues regarding that sort of thing. What do you say to those that say, well, House Bill 2 doesn't really have an enforcement mechanism?
That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous argument, because the enforcement is that we have trespass laws to keep men out of women's bathrooms.
Okay.
And that's how we've always kept men out of women's bathrooms, is with the trespass laws. The penalty for violating the law does not have to be set forth in that particular bill, as long as it's in the code somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have penalties for violating the trespass laws. We also have penalties for sexual assault in bathrooms. So increasing the penalties, as McGrady's bill seeks to do and as Cooper's bill sought to do, is not really going to solve the problem of keeping men out of bathrooms. It creates what I like to refer to, which Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest came up with this idea. It's a look but don't touch policy.
Right.
You know, that it's not really going to keep men out of women's bathrooms, and it's not going to keep women from losing their privacy. It just elevates the penalty if the man commits a sexual assault while he's in the bathroom.
Right. Well, and the way that, and I may have mentioned this to you before, but and forgive me if I have, but I think the very best explanation of why a bill like House Bill 2 is needed is it actually came from somebody who was making fun of the whole House Bill 2 thing, a local sports talk show host. He was he and his partner have mocked this bill repeatedly, but one day he was talking about sitting in the stands at a baseball game, and a foul ball came and it was headed right toward his child. And without thinking, his reflexes kicked in, and he stuck his hand in front of his child to protect his child from this ball that could have hit his child in the face and harmed the child. If you have a daughter and you're at a public place like a restaurant, and I told my son this, he and his girlfriend, there's a reflex mechanism that is normal for men to protect their wives and their children, whether
exactly.
They be male or female. And so if you're sitting in a local restaurant or a mall or whatever, and your child goes or your wife goes into a restroom, just like trying to protect that kid from a baseball, your radar goes up as a man, and you're like, whoa, you know, why is that man walking into this bathroom, you know, with my
exactly.
9-year-old daughter? And so what happens is, if you have an ordinance like Charlotte's, then they can do that and simply say, I'm identifying as one of the 700 gender identities that there are now. And there's nothing anyone can do about it. There was a case, I'm sure you know of, in Washington, where a security guard followed a man into a woman's restroom, a female security guard, and said, "Hey, bud, what are you doing in here?" And she escorted him out. She was charged with assault. So it's not like...
It's backwards.
Yeah.
And they've turned it 180 degrees in the wrong direction.
Yes. And so it's not as if there was this great plague of men in women's bathrooms even before the Charlotte Ordinance. But the Charlotte Ordinance opens the door and prohibits men from exercising that ingrained reflex response that says, "Why are you following my child into that restroom?" And Tammy, one of the most horrid things I've ever read in my life was from the Charlotte Observer that said, you know, young girls are going to have to get used to seeing male genitalia. I even feel bad just saying that, quoting that to you.
Yeah.
How horrid is that? And who are these people that would even write such a thing?
It's the editorial staff of the Charlotte Observer. That's who these people are. Taylor Batten wrote that.
They really believe that?
They do.
I mean, that's sick.
They apparently really do believe that you just have to get over it if you don't want your daughter to be in a bathroom and exposed to men in the bathroom.
Well, I think that's sick. I mean, and I don't care if they don't like it. That's to me is wrong.
Well, it shows you how tone deaf the Charlotte Observer is.
Yeah. Well, so what's the bottom line now, Tammy Fitzgerald here with us of the North Carolina Values Coalition? We have these four bills. Obviously, you're staying very busy. What's next for you? Do you anticipate any of these bills getting heard in committee?
Well, the only bill that I think has a chance of getting to a committee hearing is Chuck McGrady's bill.
Right.
And the unfortunate thing is that I believe Chuck McGrady is relying on Democrat votes to help him get the bill passed, because the majority of the Republican caucus, I think, is probably against this bill. I don't know for sure. We've been checking votes, and I just don't see that they have, you know, a majority of the caucus in favor of any kind of repeal. But if that bill got to a committee hearing or to the House floor, they would have to rely on Democrats to pass the bill with Republicans. And, you know, the response from Democrats to this bill hasn't been that great either.
Yeah.
So,
Equality North Carolina doesn't like it.
No, they don't.
How about that? You guys on the same page?
Well, Darren Jackson and, you know, Jeff Jackson, some of those guys that have proposed other bills, they don't like it either.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to continue to encourage our legislators to stand strong on House Bill 2. The momentum is picking up, and it's actually going the other direction now, especially with the announcement yesterday by the Trump administration,
right,
and probably more announcements to come in the future. There will be things that will shed some light on why this, you know, radical policy about allowing men into women's bathrooms is harmful, and why we just don't want that kind of thing happening in the state of North Carolina.
Well, you know, and I know you have other media obligations, so I'm going to let you go, but I had a guest on here recently who said, you know, when a person dies, they check off male or female on their birth certificate or whatever. When you die, whoever fills that death certificate out, male or female, there's none of this other in-between stuff. And what bothers me, and maybe this is a conversation for another day, I'm sure, but what bothers me is the open-armed acceptance of the whole transgender phenomena that has happened primarily, you know, it's happened by, you know, the elitists and the education establishment, but also by lawmakers. They talk about it like, oh, well, yeah, that's a real thing. But, I mean, nobody is questioning the validity of this.
It's interesting you brought that up, because yesterday at the General Assembly, I was approached by two transgender people.
Oh, wow.
So Equality NC has all their transgender storytellers down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one who talked to me, she said to me that she was transgender, and she didn't like calling it transgender. She liked calling it a medical condition related to sex. And, you know, my response was, well, what makes you think it's a medical condition? And she really didn't have a good answer for that. She said, well, there's some studies showing, you know, the brain cortex, this and that. And I said, that's one study that hasn't been replicated. And she admitted that. So Then she said, well, it's just a medical condition. And this is the travesty of the whole thing, is that there is no medical proof that transgenderism is real.
Yeah.
Now, there is some psychological evidence that people go through gender dysphoria, and that's real, but it's not related to genetics or any kind of medical proof. And yet people seem to have just bent over backwards to accept that this is quote unquote scientific.
Yeah.
And that, you know, actually what happens in these situations is that it's fluid, mm-hmm. meaning that people can decide they're one gender one yeah. day and another gender the next day, and they go back and forth. And so that presents the problem with ordinances like Charlotte's. How do you enforce a law
right.
that is based on feelings and not facts?
Well, you can't, and it's ridiculous.
Yes.
So I could spend another 30 minutes with you. One thing that I do think is problematic that you pointed out about the bill that Representative McGrady filed under housing, it says you can't discriminate for citizenship. So if somebody's an illegal, I mean, see, the whole movement in this country is to do something about illegal immigration. And here is Representative McGrady filing a bill that would, you know, say
it gives illegals the right to sue people
for housing here in North Carolina.
And employment. So don't forget employment.
I don't think he's got his ear to the ground and hearing what the people
I don't know if this was intentional or unintentional. I'm not sure they thought through it that well, but it just dawned on me in looking through it last night that was an issue.
Yeah. And so... And one last thing on the cities thing, there's like a public notice thing on his bill. Can you explain that a little bit? You have to give a 30 or a 90 day referendum notice or something.
Yes. Yeah, so in the McGrady bill, if the cities are allowed to pass local ordinances that elevate sexual orientation and gender identity to protected classes, but they have to give 30 days notice to the public. Now, that doesn't do a lot. I mean, we had 30 days notice last year with Charlotte, and we still couldn't stop it.
Right.
You know, so that just doesn't do very much. But then if the ordinance is passed, there's a 90-day moratorium on it going into effect.
Okay.
Under this law. And during that 90 days, if people don't like the law in the city, they can file a petition for recall, which requires the signatures of 10% of the people who voted in the last municipal election. So if you can just imagine how those people who signed that petition are going to be targeted and bullied by the Human Rights Campaign and Equality NC. I mean, this is what happened in California back when they passed their marriage amendment.
Yeah.
People who gave a $100 donation to the marriage campaign were fired from their jobs.
Wow.
So really what we need, Representative McGrady, is a bill that protects people of faith from being discriminated against.
Yeah. Well, we'll end it there because that's something I wholeheartedly agree with. Tammy Fitzgerald, there's really nobody better that I'm aware of in North Carolina that is on the front line standing up for values and things that mean a lot to a lot of people. So thank you very, very much for what you do and for joining us here once again on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark.
All righty then. Well, Tammy Fitzgerald, she knows her stuff and she is involved, and I appreciate all that she does. I really do, because whether you agree with her or not, very few people are willing to take a stand for anything, really. And she is taking a stand, and she takes a lot of heat, she draws a lot of fire, but you know what, I respect Tammy Fitzgerald and I respect the work that she does. And I appreciate her being not only a guest, but she's really a very excellent guest, because she was able to break that bill down. And you know what? It just came out last night, and already less than 24 hours, she's very articulate on it. Now, you may or may not agree with everything she said, but in fact, I think she probably knows more about it than some of the members in the General Assembly that probably haven't even looked at it yet. So. They might want to call Tammy and get an explanation. But citizenship, that was interesting. That opens up a whole new can of worms there, potentially. So anyway, I'm not going to ramble on about this. I think that, you know, I wrote an article yesterday. Is it time to move on from repealing HB2? You can find that at NC Capital Connection. And it's based on what Senator Kravick said. you know, hey, we're working on other stuff. We're trying to move the state forward, and you know, it's time to move on. And I think that the more we muddy the water here, I don't think it's helping. And so, anyway, thanks very much to Tammy Fitzgerald of North Carolina Values Coalition and to Jenna Robinson of the James D. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. Thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We've got a big guest for you tomorrow. You will not want to miss tomorrow's program. I'm not going to tell you who it is. I'm still confirming, but 99%. But what's that? Don't want to jinx it. I'm saying so. Just pay close attention to tomorrow's show, and I think you'll be very pleased. Thanks for listening, and until tomorrow, this is Mark Shiver. Thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.